So today I thought I would go just teach a very simple Tonglen instruction. And what Sogyal Rinpoche is given in the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying are two sections of this practice. And it's called Tonglen, which is sending and taking, or giving and receiving is the way he translates those words. And what he's outlined is first a preliminary Tonglen practice, which has four different examples or ways you could work with it as a way of getting used to the practice itself. And then he goes into what's called the main Tonglen practice, and that he outlines as a five-step process. And then he goes into the Tonglen for a dying person. So I think it's actually very helpful to work with this, after there's a little foundation, because I think there's a lot here. And you could actually go through the preliminary Tonglen practice, like each one at a time, the environmental Tonglen, self Tonglen, Tonglen in a living situation, and Tonglen for others. And then go forward with what he's presenting. But basically, I think that this condensed practice, and I'll give you all a copy afterwards, covers a lot of this material in a very simple way. So I thought it might be beneficial since everything's in the book and you can just use this if you wish. It's simpler. So basically, this is a practice where we can be actively engaged in working with the energy of a situation. And you can do it in such a way that no one actually even knows you're doing it. You can do it at any point when there's difficulty or you feel pain or there's a difficult situation that you're working with. And what we're using here is the medium of the breath. So we're working with texture and breathing in environmentally, image of a texture of dark, heavy, claustrophobic. It's mostly the things we want to push away. So this is turning the tables on ourselves in a way. And then we're breathing out what's light, spacious, open, and cool. And I know I've heard that cancer patients are sometimes taught a reverse Tonglen practice where they breathe in cool and spacious, open, and breathe out sort of the heaviness of their disease. So it's interesting that this is exactly the reverse of that. So I think, you'll see why. In this practice, you can work with your eyes open or closed. So when you begin the practice, you always begin and end this particular practice with 5 or 10 minutes of the shamatha practice, which is peaceful abiding. So that's what we've been doing the last two times. So that you have a sense of centering yourself, being present in the room, working with your own breath, just being there and working with that. And then at that point, you can begin working with the Tonglen practice. And at the end of the practice, you go back to the shamatha practice so that, again, there's a sense of coming back to your own breath, being present in the room, and shifting gears, you could say. So what I'd like to propose is the bell is actually very helpful, and I'd like to do what's called a guided meditation here in terms of the Tonglen. And I'll begin the practice with one strike of the gong, and we'll just do our shamatha meditation. So that's working with your posture, your breath, and thoughts, if they arise, when they arise, just come back to the breath. So just very simple. So we'll do that for a short time. And then when I strike the gong twice, I'll begin the Tonglen instruction. So we'll go through the instruction and You'll have some chance to practice it. And at the end, I'll strike the gong 3 times, and that will end that practice. And then we'll come back to the shamatha very simply. So all of these steps are written out for you, so I'll give that to you later, and you can work with it at home. So first, we'll just begin sitting together. So the Tonglen practice, just beginning. So there are four stages to the Tonglen practice. The first stage is to flash a sense of openness. And if it's helpful, you can use an image. You could pick whatever works for you. A couple of them might be what it's like to just look at the vastness of the blue sky, this open, spacious quality. Or to stand by the ocean and look out over the ocean, just the vast quality. Or to be on top of a mountain and have a sense of being able to look around you in all directions and being able to see a long way into the distance. So the first part is just to flash that openness. And this is pretty short, so we'll do that about a minute. Just feel that spaciousness. The second part of the practice has to do with working with the textures of claustrophobia and freshness. And in this part of the practice, we actually breathe in what we visualize or feel or imagine as hot, heavy, claustrophobic, thick, cramped, whatever that might appear for you is fine, however that appears. And on the out-breath, we breathe out that which is cool, refreshing, light, peaceful. So the there's alternation on the breath, and so the breath, you're actually then working with these two textures on the in-breath and the out-breath. So it's important, you can, in this practice, you can actually manipulate your breath a little bit and exaggerate if that helps you in terms of working with evening the in-breath and the out-breath. So it's fine to take deeper breaths, longer breaths, and more, you could say, more specific or conscious of your breath. That's fine. So as you do that, each cycle, breathing in, you would breathe in the dark, hot, heavy. Breathing out, you would breathe out the light, white, spacious, airy. It's very important to imagine that you're breathing in and out through all the pores of your body, that you remember your back, that you remember that you aren't solid. And often people feel frightened that they'll be breathing in something that will get stuck inside them. But you can visualize your body this way as porous. I tell meditation students they can think of themselves as Swiss cheese. So there's actually a sense of airiness there. You can think of yourself as transparent, hollow, made of light. Whatever image works for you, there's not any particular one thing that you have to do, but you actually can choose what works for you. The idea here is that you're bringing the heavy in and you're letting the light out, you're letting the spaciousness out. So work with that texture for a minute and let's try that together. The third part of the practice has to do with working with specific situations or people in your life. So in this part, the third stage, you can bring up a personal situation that's very real to you. So you can pick anything that feels very immediate. So, for example, in this situation, maybe if you had a friend who's dying of cancer, for example, you could bring that person to mind and feel their presence if they're suffering and in pain, they're feeling fear and anxiety. You could breathe in any of that or all of that. You're opening your heart and you're basically opening your own spacious compassion to this other person. So again, the breath can be deep and slow with in and out breaths of even length. And when you breathe out relief in whatever form that might take, whatever you might imagine. Some sense of helping them to overcome their fear or a sense of peace for them. It's important to know if you're doing the practice for someone who's seriously ill or dying, it's important to know that you're not doing the practice to physically remove their disease. You're not trying to do anything like that. You're just trying to ease their distress and their feelings of whatever their distress might be, whatever their suffering. So bring something to mind. It can be a person, it can be a situation. And in this stage of the practice, if it's difficult to do it for someone else, or if you're in a crisis or your own situation is difficult, you can do it for yourself or for the person you just had a fight with together, yourself and that other person as well. So there are different stages that you can work with. So anything you'd like to work with, bring that up now and bring in the pain or suffering of that situation and bring out a relief relief to that situation. If your mind wanders, come back to the person that's in front of you or the situation. The fourth part of the practice is expanding the practice out to others. And in this stage of the practice, we take whatever we've been working with and actually include a wider circle of compassion. So that is to say, if, for instance, you were doing this practice in a hospice and actually with someone in front of you, you could work with that particular situation. And then you could think about all the people in the hospice who are there at that moment, who are going through the stages of dying and who are in various situations of anxiety or fear or pain. And then you could go to all those in the town that might be suffering similarly, to those in the state and beyond, however far you would wish to go with a circle of compassion. And the point of this is to realize that pain is experienced and shared by many, and it's not just a single situation, but that all humans share this similar way or this similar possibility of pain and suffering. So in this case, what started out as personal becomes your connection with all human beings. You don't have to do the fourth stage if you wish, and there are other ways to shorten this practice we can talk about further. But see now if you can take this situation you've been working with and expand this out even just to one other person or a few other people who might be suffering in a similar way. And as I strike the gong, come back to your shamatha practice and just come back to your own body and breath and working with that. Wow. So if you have any questions, we can talk about that. This was given as a guided meditation, and you can do this at home and practice it this way, but more immediately, I think, if you're working with someone or you see a situation that's painful, you can just do it in a flash. And that would mean you can just drop the whole hoopla and just be right with that situation and immediately bring in the pain of the situation and breathe out some sense of relief. So in one of her books, this teacher named Pema Chodron, I think she talks about being in the grocery store and seeing a child being yelled at and grabbed, and you know, the mother's just frantic and yelling, and she feels she can't intervene. There's nothing she can do to intervene. There's no violence taking place, but she's feeling the child's pain, and she's just breathing in the pain of the situation and relief to the mother, too. So it opens your heart of compassion, and it can be very immediate and used in any situation. But it's very good to practice it in the context of your own home meditation practice, because it will help you ride the waves of energy that might come as you work with it and be more prepared in the moment to work with a difficult situation.
Thank you. I tried that this week after having read it.
Yes.
And so I'm really glad to see the whole piece. It was, because I just did the fast thing. I saw something and I tried to take it in some way. And it just seems like such a baby step. I mean, it seemed like such a little thing. But I found it, I really found it quite powerful. Mm-hmm. Even just reading and trying it. And I'm glad I did, and I'm glad I appreciate the greater depth of the pieces. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Try it again.
Yeah, I think this is, I think I can see that this is more like a consolidation in a way, and it just makes it, I think, more manageable in some way. But I'm now very curious about going through all the steps that he outlines, because I think there's a lot in each one of those. So you can experiment and see. Yeah, you're welcome.
I want to apologize for my coughing fit. I'm very sorry.
I think there's a lot of empathy and compassion in this group for that. I'm sorry
I didn't take in your pain. I was somewhere else. I wished I had, now that you
never occurred to me.
I was in my own place with my stuff, and it would have been interesting to see if the coughing subsided a little faster, if we could have all cued into that.
And then I got locked out.
Oh, right. Perfect.
It was perfect.
I was waiting for the right
Oh.
I was out there for a while.
Your timing was wonderful.
You had good compassion.
Well, thank you.
That's good.
Good.
Well, I'll tell you that I'm somewhat empathic, and so when I read this, I thought, I don't know if this would work for me, because in the past, I have, just by being next to someone in the grocery store who seems to be in pain, taken on that without even consciously being aware of it. Mm-hmm. I over the past year and a half, I've worked on that kind of protection, and so for some reason, when I read it, I missed that whole part about doing the meditation piece, which is what I do in order to protect myself, is I center myself and I ground myself, which is exactly what. So now it's fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, it went very well, because I understand that I have to start with A before I can go to B, which I didn't do. I didn't read in this.
Yes, that's helpful. And also, often too, I don't know. Oh, I know. I was reading this in another book. Pema Chodron has a, I don't know if I bought it, I brought a little book on Tonglen, but she talks about sometimes people will just take a very short in-breath because they don't want to breathe in the pain, and a really long out-breath, or the other way around. So it's very interesting to note, and that balance is really important, so that you're not particularly, you know, in a way, you're kind of overcoming your own resistance or way of blocking out. So, you know, maybe you feel like you just want to, you know, concentrate on giving away what's really good, but you don't really take on, or the other way around. You might, you know, think, oh, I'm just going to take everything in, but forget to actually breathe out the relief or space to the whole thing. So it's interesting to note. If that happens to you, just notice and balance is important.
Did that happen to anybody, like you had more trouble with one, with either the intake or the... Did that happen to anybody else? Because it happened to me, and I was wondering. Did it happen to you, too?
Less on the outtake, it seemed like.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just note that, and then... Yeah, as you work with the practice, it's interesting to note and how it changes. And
I've so it could change from person to person.
Oh, yeah, people have over time it may change. Okay. I think for myself, I've had a very hard time with this practice. And there was one other Buddhist meditation practice I was doing, and we had to include this practice for a half an hour. And I used to just sit on my cushion, and I would. At the beginning of the hour, I would notice the time, and I'd literally fall asleep for an entire half an hour, and I'd wake up exactly after the half an hour was over, and I'd go, oh, I guess I did it. I just resisted it so much. I couldn't. I didn't set the alarm or anything. It was just every time. It was a half an hour, exactly. So it's very interesting to note and see, and other people just loved it. It was their favorite practice. So... I've always personally had a very hard time with this, and I think it just shows me the place I need to go. You know, that's how I always see things that are difficult, I think.
And in doing it the opposite way, are people making the decision themselves about when you would do it one way or the other?
Oh, in terms of what I mentioned about they teach cancer patients to breathe in. I'd say that this is the Tonglen practice as it's been taught, and the reverse Tonglen maybe is some sense of offering people a way to feel some relief for themselves that might work, and people may feel that way. But it's also when they've taught this Tonglen practice, like to patients with AIDS and things like that, especially when there's a sense of expanding out to bringing, you know, breathing in the pain of all the other people who have AIDS and who are dying, they feel that they're actually contributing something to healing others, and that actually kind of flips their own focus on themselves and expands things. Kind of opens their view in a way that helps them. That helps them a lot. So I've heard that I've read that from different teachers.
I have a real
speaking
example
of
that. We had a good friend who 18 years ago died of AIDS, Donald, and he was before a lot of the medicines and things. And we spent a lot of time with him, and he died at home, you know, with his partner, and. The last couple of days were really, really hard for him. It was hard for everybody. We spent time with him. Mm-hmm. And one day we were sitting with him, and he was clearly in pain, and he was, you know, he adjusted his drip and everything. And then he said, I just thought of something. He said, you know, if I go through this, there may be children who don't have to. And he said this less than 36 hours before he died. And it was just very... Wow, you know, I mean, he just, out of his own pain, he came to that, he didn't meditate, I mean, he didn't have, he wasn't involved in any practice, but watching him have that revelation, and it really brought him peace. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure he was still experiencing that pain, but to say it, and he, his face changed, I mean, he really had a sense, he said, I can do this, he said, if I think that there are some children who won't have to suffer. And I thought it was unique to him. He was really a very lovely man. But reading it in the book, I mean, I saw it two places. I said, wow, maybe that universal, you know, maybe this, there is something that we don't have to study it, that
right.
there's something in our nature
yes.
that allows us to want to help. And to,
yes.
and he did relieve him, so I wanted to share that it wasn't mm-hmm. just something read in the book. I mean, I saw this 18 years ago, and uh-huh. had no idea it was such a, that it was a practice that could be taught.
Yeah.
So thank you, Donald. Sorry.
Yeah.
Thank
Can
you.
I?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say thank you for leading us through this, because when I read it, you know, part of my brain was saying, this would be really good for you, and the other part of my brain was saying, yeah, but you don't want to do it, you know?
Right.
And I know, even because I'm such a visual person, even in a movie, if there's suffering, I jump up and run out of the room. Slumdog no. Millionaire, I made myself sit through that, but my head was on my husband's
yeah.
shoulder the whole time, because
yeah.
I avoid
Me too.
Pain and suffering. And I mentioned early on that I went to a Korean healer for mm-hmm. quite some time, and I never cried, but I would just get like those really deep, sad tears in the corner of my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And she would always say, like, what's that? And over time, I realized it is for all the suffering in the world, but because I can't look at it,
mm-hmm.
I'm stuck in it. So to use this to really look at the suffering in a person and then expand it to the world, I think
mm-hmm.
would be a very healing
mm-hmm.
process for
mm-hmm.
me personally. So.
And also using the other way to begin, just begin slowly with yourself. So the process that he talks about under preliminary Tonglin, the self Tonglin, A and B, you see yourself as, you know, the kind and the other person. So you can work with actually yourself first. That's a very good way to begin it. Like even your difficulty of doing Tonglin and your desire to do it, you can do Tonglin for yourself, for your inability to do Tonglin.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no limit to that. And in fact, Pema Chodron talks about, this woman says she has a son who's addicted to drugs, and it's just so horrible, his life and her life. And she said, I can't do Tonglin for him. I'm overwhelmed. So Pema says, well, can you do Tonglin for the home team when they lose? And she said, I can do that. I can do that, you know, the home team, you know, the little guys out there playing. So it's like you just start from the place where you can do it, and find that, you just find that opening. And other people just love fish, you know, what is it, a duck to water. So.
Oh, because I just want to reflect on that too. When you said pain and something else, I could not do it until I thought discomfort. And then when I said the word discomfort, I could breathe it in
mm-hmm.
easily. But pain, and I think you said suffering, but I think you said some other combination.
Mm-hmm.
Claustrophobic.
Mm-hmm. She said
claustrophobic. Okay, claustrophobic,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think I'm dealing with. You know, I have claustrophobia. And I think it's less than it's ever been, but it could have been that. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting that I had to modify that.
That's good. I mean, that's the thing. You just make it yours. That's the point. You find the words that work for you. You find the images that work for you. It's very, it is full of images, and they're whatever works for you. You know, you find, you get the general flavor of it, and you make it yours. You make it your practice. And we've got a lot here within the book. You can take whatever from there, and from the sheets. So you can. Take some and pass it on. Yeah. So I think it is really important to remember to do it for yourself, because like sometimes the situation is so heated, let's say you have a big fight with someone and you really can't extend to that person in that moment, or even, you know, it's just too painful. So you can do it for your own feelings and your own stuckness and your own pain and difficulty. I think I wrote that out actually as an example here. So You're welcome.
We did that.
Is everyone here today? Is there
no,
a whole class?
No, Cindy.
Okay, good. So that's why this is recorded.
Yeah.
She can hear the whole thing.
Right.
Okay.
Yes,
so anyone, so the website is dawasangpo.com/cool. Do people have that website? I sent it around. dawasangpo.com/cool. COOL. And if you got the sheet that I handed out last time, it was at the top of that. That's the website there too. But if you forget or need help, just email me. So you can go up.
Sheets from last week?
Yes, I do. Somebody didn't get them. Oh, okay.
Okay. It was a really good sheet.
Yeah. So I'll get that for you. Okay. So great. I'll turn this off.